I want you to just look around you for a second, wherever you are. Chances are you're near something made of iron.
Oh, for sure. A table leg, a screw, the rebar in the concrete.
Exactly. And if I asked you for one word to describe it, you'd probably say, solid. Sturdy.
Boring.
Boring, yes. Iron is, you know, the reliable workhorse. We build our world on it because it feels permanent. It just sits there. It does its job.
And that right there is probably the biggest misconception in all of material science.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
It's just not true. If you could zoom in, I mean, way, way in, down to the atomic level, iron is a complete mess.
A mess? How?
It's chaotic. It's a shapeshifter. It's constantly having this identity crisis, changing its whole internal structure.
Right.
It refuses to play by the normal rules of physics.
So less like a brick and more like a fugitive on the run.
That's a great way to put it. It's an atomic fugitive changing its disguise to suit the conditions.
Okay, that's a huge claim for the metal I use to cook my breakfast. So today, we're doing a deep dive into that secret life of iron. We're getting into some pretty heavy sources here. Crystal structures and mechanisms, and the theory of transformations in steels to figure out why the most stable thing in our world is, well, not.
And we're going to cover a lot, from why iron, theoretically, shouldn't even exist in the form we know it, all the way to how it behaves inside giant alien planets.
Let's start there with the shouldn't exist part. That sounds a little dramatic. I mean, I'm touching my desk leg right now. It feels pretty real.
Oh, it's real. It's just defying the math. It's what we call the stability paradox.
Okay, walk me through it.
So in physics, stability is all about packing efficiency. Atoms want to get cozy. They want to arrange themselves to use the least amount of energy, which means packing as tightly as possible.
Like stacking oranges in a box. You do that little pyramid thing to fit the most in.
Exactly, that pyramid thing. That's the most efficient way. In material science, we call that hexagonal close packed, HCP.
HCP.
It's tight, it's dense, it fills up about 74% of the space.
Yeah.
And all the calculations say that's what iron should be at room temperature.
Should be. I'm sensing a but coming.
A very big but. Because the iron we use, the stuff in your car, your building, it's not HCP. It's a structure called body-centered cubic, BCC, or ferrite.
And let me guess, BCC is not as efficient.
Not even close.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly fluffy, atomically speaking. The packing density drops to about 68%.
So it's just full of wasted space.
Totally. By all the laws of physics, that structure should be unstable. It should just collapse on itself into that tighter hexagonal shape.
Why doesn't my building fall down? What's holding this fluffy structure up?
This is the crazy part. The only thing saving it is magnetism.
Wait, like the thing that makes a magnet stick to the fridge?
That's the one. That property is literally the structural glue. In that inefficient BCC structure, the spins of the electrons all line up perfectly. And that alignment creates a powerful ferromagnetic energy. It's like an invisible scaffold. That extra energy is just enough to prop up this thermodynamically unstable structure.
That is wild. So if you could snap your fingers and just turn off magnetism in a steel beam,
the whole thing would fail.
Mm-hmm.
It would instantly try to transform into a different, denser crystal. We've basically built modern civilization on a magnetic loophole.
Okay, so this magnetic scaffold holds our world together, but you called iron a shapeshifter. Does that scaffold ever break?
Oh, it breaks. You just have to go somewhere with a little more pressure.
Like, say, the center of the Earth.
Exactly, journey to the center of the Earth. Down there, the pressure is, it's mind-boggling. We're talking 340 gigapascals.
Which is a lot.
It's so much pressure that the magnetic scaffold just can't hold up. The atoms are squeezed too close together for the electron spins to align. The glue fails.
And then the paradox resolves itself.
Instantly. The iron collapses into that tight, efficient, hexagonal, close-packed form. The one the math always said it should be. We call it epsilon iron.
So the Earth's core is likely a giant ball of non-magnetic, super-dense, hexagonal iron.
That's the theory. A ball of crushed iron behaving exactly like it's supposed to.
Okay, that makes sense. More pressure, more squishing. But then I was reading this section on super-Earths, you know, those giant exoplanets, and the story gets weird again.
It gets quantum weird, yeah?
Because at those pressures, terapascals, apparently logic would say the iron just gets more squished, right? It should stay in that perfect hexagonal form.
That's what your intuition tells you. But the research shows something shocking. At those extreme pressures, the hexagonal form, it stops being stable. Again?
What?
The iron actually flips back to a structure that looks a lot like the fluffy body-centered cubic one we have here on the surface.
No, How does more pressure make it less dense? That's like squeezing a sponge and having it expand.
Because it's not about simple packing anymore. The game changes. It becomes about electron orbitals.
Uh-oh.
See, normally the electrons deep inside an iron atom, the core electrons, they keep to themselves. They don't do any bonding.
They like their personal space.
Right. But at terapascal pressures, you're smashing the atoms so close together that those core electrons, their little bubbles, start to physically overlap with the neighbors.
So they're forced to interact.
They're forced to interact. And this completely rewrites the energy balance of the whole system. Mm. And suddenly, to accommodate this new core electron bonding, the cubic structure becomes the more stable option again. It's incredible.
The atom literally reinvents its own chemistry just to survive.
It does. And the sources point out this back and forth is not a smooth ride. It has hysteresis.
Which is basically a lag.
Very, very stubborn lag.
Right.
If you take that high-pressure hexagonal iron and start releasing the pressure, it doesn't just snap back to cubic form when it's supposed to.
Yeah.
It holds on. It overshoots the changeover point by several gigapascals. It just refuses to transform.
Why? Is it just atomic friction?
That's a great way to think of it. The transformation itself creates little defects, tiny glitches in the crystal. And those defects act like doorstops. They jam the mechanism and prevent it from sliding back easily.
Atomic doorstops. I love that. So it's not just passively changing, it's actively resisting.
It fights back.
So that's what nature does. But what about us? We try to force iron into even weirder shapes. The research talks about 2D iron. Is that like graphene? A flat sheet?
Sort of, but you have to trick it into being flat.
Mm.
Iron atoms hate being in 2D. They want to clump into a 3D ball.
So how do you do it?
You use graphene as a kind of atomic net. You take a sheet of graphene, which has these little holes in its structure like potholes.
Okay.
And iron atoms can get trapped in those holes. But the edge of the hole has a specific shape, they call it an armchair edge, that forces the trapped iron atoms to line up in a perfect little square.
So you get a single atom-thick patch of iron woven directly into the carbon.
Like atomic embroidery. It's the only way to do it. But if you want to talk about truly unnatural, we have to talk about amorphous iron.
Amorphous.
It's like glass, right?
Yeah.
No crystal structure at all.
Exactly. A total random jumble of atoms. And iron absolutely hates that. To stop it from crystallizing, you have to cool it down from a liquid so fast, it's almost impossible.
How fast are we talking?
For pure iron, the cooling rate you'd need is 10 to the power of 13 Kelvin per second.
10 trillion degrees per second.
Okay.
That's not happening.
Not with a bucket, no.
Yeah.
But the research mentions a clever workaround. Sonochemistry.
Using sound.
Intense ultrasound. You blast a liquid that has iron in it, and it creates these tiny bubbles that grow and then collapse violently. Cavitation.
Right.
And for a nanosecond, inside that collapsing bubble, you get the temperature of the sun and insane pressure. The iron melts and then freezes again instantly. Oh,
before it has time to organize itself into a crystal.
Exactly. You trap it in a glassy, chaotic state. We have to trick it with tiny exploding bubbles.
Man, we are really mean to this poor metal. We push it to its absolute limits. But sometimes, you know, the metal tricks us back. There's this great little detective story in the sources about a so-called ghost phase.
Oh, the omega phase. I saw that. Scientists kept reporting they'd found this totally new iron structure.
Yeah, in metals like titanium, the omega phase is a real thing. It's a well-known structure. And people started seeing its fingerprints in their electron microscope, images of iron.
The diffraction patterns.
Exactly. The little dots on the screen seemed to shout, "Omega is here."
Yeah.
But it was an illusion, a hallucination caused by something called double diffraction.
How does that work? How do you get a ghost reflection?
Think about looking at a double-pane window at night. You see the reflection of a lamp in the room.
Sure.
But you might also see a second, fainter ghost image as the lamp next to it. That's a reflection of the reflection.
Okay, I'm with you.
That's what happens here. Iron loves to form these things called twins, which are just mirror image versions of its own crystal. The electron beam goes through the first crystal and scatters, but then that scattered beam hits the twin crystal.
And scatters again.
And scatters again, creating a new ghost dot right where the omega phase's dot should be. But there's nothing there. It's just a trick of the light.
So iron is so complex, it creates its own optical illusions.
It definitely keeps us on our toes.
All right, so let's get to the most, I think, action-packed part of this. The actual transformation, the shape-shifting itself. Because the sources lay out two completely different ways this happens.
Right. And you can think of them as the civilian way and the military way.
I love that. Okay, civilian way first.
So this is what we call a reconstructive transformation. It's what happens when you cool iron down slowly. Think of it like a crowded party where people are just sort of mingling.
Drifting around, bumping into each other.
Exactly. The atoms diffuse. They wander around randomly, breaking bonds and making new ones until they slowly rearrange into the new crystal structure. It takes time, it needs heat, and it's disorganized.
And that's how we get things like ferrite and perlite, the softer, more workable forms.
Yes, they grow pretty organically.
Okay, but then there's the military way, martensite.
Yes, the displacive transformation. This is what happens when you quench steel, when you heat it up and then plunge it into cold water. There is no time to mingle.
So what do the atoms do instead?
They execute a coordinated maneuver. Every single atom shifts in the same direction at the same time by just a fraction of an atomic distance. It is a disciplined, instantaneous shear.
How fast is instantaneous?
The front of this transformation moves through the solid metal at a fraction of the speed of sound.
Wait, the crystal structure changes at the speed of sound?
Yes, it's a shockwave, an incredibly violent event on the atomic scale. And because it happens so fast, something else gets trapped.
The carbon.
The carbon. In the slow civilian way, the carbon atoms have time to get out of the way. Here, the iron lattice snaps shut so fast that the carbon atoms are imprisoned. It's called solute trapping.
They're literally caught inside this new crystal cage.
Yes, and they're too big for the spaces they're in, so they wedge the iron atoms apart. This creates enormous internal stress.
And in metallurgy, stress is.
That's a strength. All that internal tension is what makes hardened steel hard. Every sword, every bearing, every high-strength bolt exists because of this speed of sound atomic prison break.
That is unbelievably cool. So, what about this cabbage analogy? We can't finish without talking about the cabbage.
Ah, yes, the
This
cabbage.
is about perlite. In every textbook, they show it as these neat alternating layers, a layer of iron, a layer of iron carbide, like a stack of
A
pancakes.
classic picture. It's simple, but it's wrong. The source says to imagine a cabbage sitting in a bucket of water.
Okay.
Now, if you slice through that, what do you see?
You see stripes, a layer of a cabbage leaf, then a space which was water, then another leaf.
Right. It looks like separate layers. But are the cabbage leaves separate? No, they're all connected to the core. It's one single, complex, interconnected 3D object.
And the water is also one continuous thing, just filling in the gaps.
Perlite is the same. It's not a stack of plates, it's a bicrystal. Two intricate, interpenetrating skeletons, one of iron, one of carbide, that have grown through each other in three dimensions.
So they're mechanically woven together.
Exactly. Which is why it's so tough. It's a 3D puzzle, not a 2D
I
sandwich.
will never look at a head of cabbage the same way again. There is one last thing here, though, and it's kind of, I don't know, existential. It's about the carbon.
You mean the fact that steel is trying to rot?
Yes. The book says that cementite, the iron carbide that makes steel strong, isn't actually stable.
It's not. Thermodynamically speaking, the carbon atoms in steel would much rather just leave the iron completely and form up as pure graphite.
Like pencil lead.
Yep. Pentyl lead is the true low-energy state. Steel, like diamond, is just metastable. It's stuck in a high-energy state and is very, very slowly trying to decompose.
So my high-end kitchen knife secretly wants to turn into a pile of iron filings and graphite dust?
Give it a few million years at room temperature or heat it up for a while, and yes, that's what would happen. We see it with iron nanoparticles for medicine. If you coat them in carbon, the carbon immediately turns itself into tiny graphite shells, like little onions, because that's the most stable form.
We really are just relying on the fact that atoms are sluggish and can't move around easily to keep our world together.
That's it. We're fighting thermodynamics every single day.
So let's tie this all together. We started with iron being the definition of stable, of boring.
And what we found is that it's an illusion. It's held up by a magnetic field.
Right. It transforms under pressure at the Earth's core, then it reinvents its own electrons to survive on other worlds.
Yeah.
And the very steel we use is made through a military-style speed of sound shockwave that creates a structure that's actively trying to rot.
Boring really doesn't seem like the right word anymore, does it?
It feels like we're the weird ones.
In a way, we are. We think of our world as normal, but our ferrite, this fluffy magnetic iron, it only exists in this tiny, lucky window of temperature and pressure. To the rest of the universe, this is the exotic material.
So the solid ground we build on is really just a dynamic, chaotic system that's been paused.
Exactly. Paused in a state that's very convenient for us.
So the next time you see a skyscraper going up, or just pick up a wrench, remember what's inside. A frozen history of atomic violence and quantum shapeshifting.
And that, I think, is a lot more beautiful than just a boring lump of metal.
Couldn't agree more. Thanks for taking this deep dive.
Anytime. It was a pleasure.